Hello and welcome to Choice and Control, a podcast celebrating the contribution that people with disabilities make to our communities. In this series, we are talking all things disability, social inclusion, and the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Throughout this series, you will also be hearing some great practical advice for making the most of your NDIS plan from local people accessing the scheme. This podcast series is brought to you by the team at Carers Queensland, NDIS Local Area Coordination Partner in the Community. I'm your host, Douglas Connor. Thank you for tuning in. My guest on the show today is Jeff Monk, a Brisbane-based art enthusiast who has devised a technique for making visual arts more accessible to all. I was lucky enough to catch up with Jeff at the Queensland Art Gallery a couple of months ago and experience his technique firsthand. Jeff has a vision impairment, and while his technique does indeed help people who are blind or vision impaired to experience art in a different way, it also helped a complete art novice like me develop a far greater understanding of what it was that I was looking at. It was an incredibly interesting experience, and I'm so excited to share Jeff's knowledge and his passion for art with you today. So Jeff, you have a vision impairment and a huge passion for the visual arts. Some people might find that concept somewhat difficult to comprehend. Can you tell me where that passion for the arts originated from?
Yes, Doug. Yes, people do find that a little bit odd. Someone who can't see is passionate about visual experiences. But of course, I like to say to folks, well, I'm a human being like you. I have the same passions, the same desires, and the same interests. That it may be a visual experience just means that I seek to find out about how to engage with it and enjoy it and appreciate it in a different way. My background professionally was as a forensic accountant, and I guess I've always had a bit of an analytical and inquiring mind. I found that I had a wonder of how visual arts, in particular paintings, photography, sculpture, came to be and form the expression of artists about the world in which we occupy. So I applied my analytical skills, I guess, to understanding what art is and how art is, because I felt that all artwork, being just the representation of materials in a medium, were telling a story. And what I had to uncover so that I could appreciate the art and enjoy it was how to reveal the story.
And it was through that passion, Jeff, for art that you came to start VisLAN, or Visual Translation Language. Can you explain to me how that process works?
Yes, Visual Translation Language was the solution to the problem that I just spoke about, and that is that as a person who cannot see the visual culture that is so rich in our world, I needed to understand how it existed, what made it up. And what I discovered through approaching this probably over 10, 15 years ago now, was that the answer to appreciating visual experiences was to understand that visual experiences are made up of phenomena. Phenomena being, in the case of created arts, paints and shapes and various elements that artists use to create visual illusions that trigger our memories into, or trick our memories into thinking that we're looking at something other than just a collection of paint or stone. And so the process works basically as a question and answer process in which the blind person leads a sighted colleague or friend, who incidentally doesn't have to be an art expert, in a dissection or an analysis of the elements that exist in the object of the artwork, rather than get caught up in the art history and the science and the wizardry of the artistry. What my system does is it simply reveals the objective evidence of what the artist has created or put in place to create the visual illusion that all people respond to. And I have found that by leading with a series of broad questions and then reducing those questions down into a more detailed set of questions, more and more of how the artwork exists and how it is being what it appears to be is revealed. And that process is easily learned. It is specific, and it is wonderful fun for both the blind person and the sighted person.
You started Visland somewhat out of the frustrations at the limited nature of your own art gallery experiences in the past. Firstly, how does Visland differ from some of the art experiences available to people with vision impairment? And secondly, how does it alter the experience of art for someone with a vision impairment?
Currently, particularly institutional art galleries and museums are endeavouring to grapple with the problem of blind and vision impaired and people who are visually remote. And I use the term visually remote to refer to people who may have poorer sight or may not have direct line of sight or may not have a clear line of sight to the object that they're trying to appreciate. So it can, in fact, encompass a good many of the sighted community as well. Many of the offerings now tend towards guided tours in which the gallery may provide a specialist tour that you have to book with a group of a large number of people and so many weeks in advance. But then the guide will give their best attention to telling you what they think you can see in the painting. Now, that's a lecture style presentation. And whilst it's a good attempt and thoughtful, I've always found it a little bit demeaning to be told what somebody else thinks is there to see. I would much rather, and many of my colleagues, blind and vision impaired, much prefer to be able to understand things from source information so we can make up our own mind. Other options that are out there at the moment include the digital version of the guided tour, where the art gallery simply provides you with a digital player and says, there you are, off you go, and that'll give you your art gallery experience. And of course, it's the same thing. It's a lecture style. Generally, a commentary about the art history that leaves you wondering what the hell was it that I was actually looking at as well. The third thing that's starting to creep in, which I find very interesting and a good try, but it leaves me rather cold, is the topographical development of, say, 3D printers providing raised edges, tracing the outlines of lines and what have you, or even objects in a particular painting. And whilst that's very interesting, myself and colleagues agree that it creates a totally different object, which captures nothing of the emotion, of the other elements of light, dark, shade, warmth, etc., that are so vital in paintings and photography. They may give you a bit of a traced outline, but essentially, unless you see the original and understand what the original is, then following the tracing line seems a little difficult too. We tested that with the Queensland Art Gallery, incidentally, who thought that we should be very pleased about this. And my suggestion to the art guide was if they had closed their eyes when that three-dimensional sketch was provided and they had not seen the original work, would they have been able to tell what it was either? And the guide had to admit that that would seem a little difficult. So there are some good intentions. There are some well-intentioned people, but they're still approaching it from a sighted person's point of view. The Visland experience, on the other hand, is one in which the sighted person can attend a gallery or museum with friends or with gallery or museum staff, if they wish, at any time. They don't have to prearrange it. They can just turn up like any other member of the public and not be made into a special isolated group that has to be accommodated on a particular day at a particular time. And using this technique, using this inquiry system, they develop a conversation about understanding what the object is and how it is being what it appears to be. The wonderful thing about this, as I say, is that it provides a comparable experience. We can, as an art lover, go to a gallery at any time, with anyone, anywhere, just the same as any other sighted person. And we can enjoy and understand what the object of our interest is and then embark on the same sort of conversations that anyone else would have about it. the likes, the dislikes, the reasons why, the cultural aspects, the history, etc., once we know what the object is. And so the experience is a much richer experience, I think. And not only do I think, but also the feedback from my colleagues and the sighted people, the guides, the gallery officials, the friends and the families who come with us, they take longer over giving us the information that we ask about. So they have to pick their words, they have to look more closely, they have to slow down. In the vernacular of today, they become aware and mindful and begin to appreciate so much more about what it is they are seeing as well. And so we end up with this rather wonderful experience of the blind person leading the sighted person through the activity, and both of them being able to sit there. And commonly we'll have conversations that might go for 30 or 40 minutes or more, and I'll turn to my sighted friend and I'll say, hey, look at that, a blind person and a sighted person have had a 30 or 40 minute conversation about this artwork, and one of us can't even see it.
It really is an unreal perspective to have for a sighted person to be able to go into the art gallery and to actually take a lot more from the gallery experience than they otherwise would have. You're a big advocate, Jeff, for making public spaces fully accessible to people with disability. You don't believe that making a space physically accessible is necessarily going far enough. You spoke before about creating a comparable experience for people with disabilities. Can you expand a little bit on what you mean by that?
Yes, thanks, Doug. Disabled people don't want to be special. They don't want a special experience. They just want the similar experience, as similar as they can get within the constraints of their ability. So I like to think that we are not disabled by our conditions, whatever those conditions are. We are disabled by the design of the world about us. And in that regard, we come to the point of physical access, which is very, very important, safety, just basic safety, and also I think it helps protect people's insurance policy. But we see a lot about access, and I can give you the example of going to the Queensland's cultural precinct, to the galleries, the libraries, the museums. All there, we have braille trails crisscrossing the courtyard, so that you can get there by public transport, hop onto a braille trail, and follow the braille trail to any of the access points or any of those buildings, which is wonderful. So they're anticipating, for example, that blind people may like to come there and independently travel to and from the galleries. The moment you get to the glass door, of course, the Braille trail ends. And the next question is, now what do I do? So either they're anticipating that the blind person or vision impaired person will be able to have autonomous access to the buildings, and that's inclusive, but they don't have autonomous access to the content. You've got to have someone with you for that. So I believe that it's not just having physical access to an environment, but it's also having the ability to have comprehension of the content of that environment. So access plus comprehension gives inclusion.
And Jeff, we've spoken a little bit about accessibility so far and creating those comparable experiences for people with disabilities. On this show, we talk a lot about social inclusion. For you, what does that phrase mean?
Social inclusion, to me, is about being able to operate in the community, to go about my business in the community without being made an exception of. I don't think most people with disabilities would disagree. Fundamentally, we just want to be people included in to the activities of the day-to-day community, to be able to go and enjoy and participate with as much comfort as anybody else can. And so rather than have special experiences made for us, where organisations are often very fond of saying, oh, we've got a blind exhibition on here, a vision impaired, or a tactile exhibition. On that point, I'd say when you go to an art gallery, they'll often say, yes, we've got a tour for the blind, come and touch all of these statues. And I will say, well, probably the artist wasn't intending that you touch the statues in the first place, And secondly, there's a painting on the wall over there I'd like to see. What can you tell me about that? And they have no answer to it. So there is a prejudice within the community about how people with various conditions and disablements are to be accommodated. But for me, social inclusion is about seeking a comparable experience of the world about us by providing tools and assistance as required, not creating special groups which simply highlights our point of difference rather than keeps us included. In the case of the art world, when I'm giving talks to people about how BizLand works and running workshops, which generally speaking are well attended by the sighted, with the most common comment at the end of it being, I'll never look at the world the same again. The thing that I like to leave people with there is that as a blind person, a vision impaired person, I have a much richer experience of the visual world or the visible world than perhaps do many sighted people, because people use their sight as shorthand and move around blithely, not paying attention. But as a blind person, I have a much richer experience, and I like to think that I invite sighted people to be included in my world. So I like the idea that social inclusion is about me saying, yes, it's great over here in the world of the vision impaired if you know the things that I know, and I'd really like to share it with you. So come and be included in my world, and free of charge.
That's a really interesting perspective, Jeff. And you receive support through the National Disability Insurance Scheme. In your words, can you explain the opportunities that the NDIS can afford to people to really empower the lives of people with disability?
Yeah, look, the NDIS has been a marvellous enhancement to my life. It took a little while to get my head around what it actually could do for me. But now that I understand that the proper role and use of NDIS support is to facilitate having these comparable experiences of life. I find that I don't need so much of the care, but I need the facilitation of a life. A blind person, it is very unsafe in a visual world for blind people to get around to do the sorts of things they like to do. For example, I love kayaking. I love bushwalking. I actually am cursed with enjoying all of the outdoor activities that a normal, healthy, sighted life might give. To participate and fulfill my ambitions in those areas, the NDIS has come along and provides me with the sighted companion to make all of those things doable. Previously, they were frustrations, but now I'm able to kayaking with a normal or able-bodied kayaking club and compete. I go bushwalking with family and friends or by myself. I have goals and ambitions to cover certain overland tracks in Tasmania. The art experience is rich and valuable as it is to anybody. So I find that the NDIS, thinking about it as the supplier of tools and resources that I need to have a good, comparable experience of life, and that has made me a happier, a more engaged and socially orientated person. And I think that this is something which perhaps people miss. So much of the NDIS speak is about home care and maintenance and cleaning and what have you, when in fact I invite people to think beyond that, think what they would like to do, that they would do if only they didn't have the conditions that they had. What are the things they would like to do? Because those things are the things that other people can do easily. And it's interesting that during the recent COVID lockdown, I was amused to hear how many in the community seem to be suffering from being constrained by something outside of their control, locked up within their houses, unable to get out and about and share the world and do what they would like to do. How dreadful it was. Mental health was spiraling out of control. And I thought all I could think of was, welcome to the world of the disabled.
Yeah, like I said, that's an experience that personally have been experiencing for many years. And it seems like the NDIS has really helped. 50 odd years. And it seems like the NDIS, when you had that sort of change in perspective, rather than thinking of what funds am I receiving, and started thinking what can I use these funds for, and in what sort of creative ways, that really unlocked the whole process for you.
That's exactly right. As I say, the funds are a means to an end, and it's the community saying, you know what, we get it. For you, that is a person with an impediment, it is reasonable and necessary that you enjoy a full life. I'm often told, oh, you can't have an exceptional life, and I have responded as respect to the art. I said, oh, I'm sorry, I thought we had art galleries and museums for the general public to go to. I didn't realise going to them was an exceptional experience. I would have considered that rather normal. And
very normal.
So what I encourage listeners to this podcast to understand, or at least consider, is that this is not just about keeping you safe and well. That's an excellent start. But it's about empowering you to dream about where your interests take you that you're constrained or unable to participate in without assistance, whether it's technical or human, because the NDIS is about, in my view and in my experience, facilitating that so that you can have a full and rich life as any other member of the community has the right to expect.
Jeff, living where you live and being a keen waterman, it must have been an absolutely fantastic feeling to get back on the bay there in Moreton Bay and get back on the kayak.
Look, the kayaking with my NDIS assistant, the kayaking and the fishing has been superb, because we were allowed to do that during the lockdown. The flathead have been running and the brim have been running. So
beautiful.
Thank you, NDIS. I've had very good fish feed. There's been plenty of opportunities to walk the foreshore, again with NDIS support, but also my companions, as I call them, rather than carers, have been with me all the way. And we've still done some artwork by looking through books, or at least they look through the books and we ask the same question: what is it you're looking at? How is it being what it is? So the lockdown here by the bayside has been as rigorous as anywhere else. In fact, probably a little more rigorous with the police walking along the foreshore. However, my companions, as I call them, have facilitated still wonderful experiences. I think the worst story was losing three flathead from the kayak in one morning, because when you're blind trying to land a 20-inch flathead when you've already got two on board is a little difficult.
Oh, it's a tragic loss, Jeff. It is.
Tragic loss. Well, when you're fishing blind, sometimes you don't even know what's on the end of the line until it's in the boat.
No, it's very impressive. I'd love to see that in action one day.
Hey, come for a paddle with me.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much. Well, Jeff, that's all I have to ask for today, but thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat to me.
Pleasure, Doug. Always happy to share experiences and encourage people to think beyond the boundaries that they might have and to start putting in place through the NDIS the very reasonable expectations of living a good and happy life.
Thanks, Jeff. For more info about Jeff's program, VisLAN, jump online to visible.com. So that's spelled VISERBAL.com. There is some information up there about the process and how it all works. You can also check out a catalogue of artworks to which the VisLAN technique has already been applied. Thank you once again for tuning in to Choice and Control, a Carers Queensland podcast. For more information about Carers Queensland, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, or the Local Area Coordination Program, please connect with us online at carerscqueensland.com.au, or you can catch up with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarersQueenslandNDIS. We hope this podcast can become a place for people with disability to share their experiences and their stories. So if you have a story that you think we should know about, please contact us via the Carers Queensland Inquiries line at 1300 999 636 or via email at cq.inquiries@ndis.gov.au. Until next time, thanks for listening.